like to call the meeting to order. Commissioner Studley?
Here.
Commissioner Haon?
Here.
Commissioner Liu?
Here.
Commissioner Ward?
Here.
First item on the agenda is public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission. Before the first speaker begins, I'd like to say that we're going to keep very strict time today on public comment. 3 minutes are going to be given to each speaker. When the buzzer goes off, I'm going to ask you to sit down, even if you're mid-sentence. We have a lot of people here today, and we want everyone to have their opportunity. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Doctora Maria Rivero. I worked at Laguna Honda for 22 years. Then I became a whistleblower. I was harassed, and I was driven out of my job. We reported a potential conflict of interest between the then health director, Dr. Mitchell Katz, and a contractor, Health Management Associates, to the Ethics Commission in September of 2009, almost 2 years ago. In 2005 and 2006, Health Management Associates was awarded a $250,000 contract to assess and work with the health department. Within 2 years, then Health Director Dr. Katz got onto HMA's payroll as a consultant. Starting in 2008, Dr. Katz received over $10,000 a year from Health Management Associates. In 2009, the Health Department paid Health Management Associates $65,000 to provide consulting services, while at the same time, Health Management Associates was paying the then Health Director over $10,000 to do consulting work for them. In 2010, the health department extended HMA's contract twice, boosting the money that they made from the city from $65,000 to $103,000. Dr. Katz recommended and signed off on HMA's contract extensions while pocketing another $10,000 plus from HMA that year. All told, HMA was paid $103,000 by the city in the past 3 years, and in the past 3 years, Dr. Katz was paid at least $30,000 by HMA. This is a relatively simple complaint. However, after 22 months of us providing documentation regarding this to the Ethics Commission, it's yet to complete its investigation and make a decision. Meanwhile, Dr. Katz has left town. Why was this complaint buried? Why were we not protected from retaliation? And what happened to our whistleblower complaint that's now 16 months old while we lost our jobs? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Patrick Manette-Shaw. I'm a private citizen here on my own time. On June 21st, Heather Knight and Will Kane published an article in the Chronicle about the grand jury's report, San Francisco Ethics Commission, the sleeping watchdog. Knight quoted John St. Croix as saying he was, quote, confused and saddened that they used the approach they did. You'd think there is a chaotic mess, and no such thing is true, end quote. To many observers, the Ethics Commission is a complete mess, and the grand jury's report barely scratched the surface. This commission should order Mr. St. Croix to begin to begin investigations promptly after the 14-day window. This commission should unrelinquish your authority you have handed to St. Croix by requiring him to change your regulations for investigations and enforcement and start scheduling hearings on all referrals to ethics, not just those recommended for dismissal. As commissioners, your duty is to protect San Franciscans, not to protect Mr. St. Croix. Interestingly, today's Whistling in the Dark grand jury report isn't so kind to the Ethics Commission either. It notes that back in 2003, then as now, your sole job, your sole function, is to administer and enforce campaign finance law. In addition, the new report indicates that your sole duty under the whistleblower program is to investigate complaints of retaliation. Why is Mr. St. Croix stalling on responding to an order of determination from the Sunshine Task Force on my two complaints, 113 and 11114? He was ordered to turn over some documents. I haven't gotten them yet. I'm going to get them. And this commission needs to rein in Mr. St. Croix that he may not unilaterally disregard an order of determination from the Sunshine Task Force. Thank you.
Members of the Commission, my name is Ray Hartz, Director of San Francisco Open Government. And the last time I was here was during the special hearing regarding Mr. Shoemaker's exemption. And I said some things with one of the members of the audience afterward, says I didn't show enough respect. I was in the military for over a decade, and one of the things I learned very quickly is that you respect an officer's uniform, but you don't necessarily respect the officer if that person does not have the capabilities or the attitude or some of the other things that go along with fulfilling the duties of that uniform. David Brooks wrote an article in the New York Times about 6 months ago, and it called the responsibility deficit. And in that, he said, the heart of any moral system is the connection between action and consequences. Today's public anger arises from the belief that this connection has been severed in one realm after another. I have gone to library commission meetings, police commission meetings, six or seven different types of meetings, and in every single one of them, I have had instances and seen instances where I either experienced and was told this or saw other members of the public told, you can't talk about that. I'm sorry. This document right here is what we're really talking about. Yes, Sunshine Ordinance may be your purview, but a Sunshine Ordinance violation, it is in many cases a violation of the Brown Act, the California Public Records Act, the California Constitution, and the Constitution of this United States. There isn't one single board member on any single board, including you, that has the right to tell a citizen they cannot talk to you about something they feel you need to hear. That's what the Constitution is about. And it rises to a higher level of protection when we're talking about the fact that you're petitioning for a redress of grievances. I had the president of the police commission tell me, you're not allowed to talk about that. And I said, sir, you're violating my constitutional rights. He says, no, I'm not. I'm just enforcing our rules. And he actually did stop me because I thought to myself, who in the God's name does this man think he is that he has the power to supersede the Constitution of the United States? And I had to take him to Sunshine and get a determination where they found him in violation of the Sunshine Ordinance. And I'm actually thinking about filing a complaint with the California Bar because the man's a practicing attorney, a former public prosecutor, and he must have some knowledge of the Constitution of this country. And to tell citizens of the United States, citizens of this city, when they come before a body, you can't talk about that, is just a downright lie. And anybody who doesn't stand up for that is violating their oath of office. You took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States and that of the state of California. And yet, in all the years that the civil grand jury report covered, you didn't do one damn thing.
On a totally different topic. My name is Judith Rosen. I am a citizen of San Francisco. I am here on the behalf of my sister, who lives two blocks away from me. It is my understanding that the 311 call system can be used anonymously and should be anonymous, and that any complaints that are listed anonymously cannot state who they come from. And this is a complaint because my sister has not There's construction next to her. She is known to the city to have put in complaints, or rather, she tried to file against them getting a variance and against the building commission accepting it. And so she's known to be opposed to this construction. There, I noticed, and she does track the complaints. However, I noticed that there's a complaint number 20114-8869. And although you're supposed to, if it's anonymous, not have any indication who, this is what it says in the comments. This is another frivolous complaint. See previous complaint. Neighbor at 67 Granada may be complainant, as workers say she comes out asking questions and taking pictures. The building is gutted. Plumbing work has not begun. Abate. Whether or not she did the complaint, I don't know. But actually, I know she didn't, because she was in Nicaragua taking care of her partner's ill mother. So here we have the 311 call unmasked. Moreover, a month ago, before she left to go to Nicaragua to take care of her mother-in-law, the city building inspectors decided to pursue visible trash can. Now, I do believe that this was also a retaliatory. There's been a number of complaints. I don't know whether or not, and which ones my sister may or may not have done through the 311 call, but my sister and her partner are both city employees and should be covered under whistleblower ordinance. So these are two different violations of whistleblower ordinance. I have sent emails to your commission, and if you need my phone number or how to get a hold of me, they are within those emails, because I don't want to violate any of her or my own past communications, which should be covered under whistleblower. I don't want to discuss this anymore here in public, but would like to, and would like them to be discussed privately. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate you listening.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Richard Nee, immediate past chair of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force for the record-keeping purposes. That's K-N-E-E, just like elbow. Just want to give you a brief update on where we are with the review of the proposed guidelines for handling, for the commission's handling of sunshine complaints. We're almost there. It's been perhaps longer, it's been a lot longer than we would have liked, and perhaps longer than you would have liked. We really appreciate your indulgence, your patience on this, but we are, as you are, we're an all-volunteer body, and sometimes we have difficulty maintaining or even mustering a quorum. So we're doing our best. Anyway, within the next month or two, we're going to be sending you our comments, and we look forward to discussing them with you.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Dr. Derek Kerr. After 20 years at Laguna Honda Hospital, I became a whistleblower, and then I lost my job. In 2009, we reported a potential conflict of interest between a contractor, Davis Jaw and Associates, and executives at CBHS, Community Behavioral Health Services, a division of the Health Department. CBHS awarded a contract to Davis Jaw based on a proposal that showed a deep, almost an insider's understanding of the issues facing CBHS. Within weeks, the contract payment was doubled, but only half the work was delivered. The study was flawed, but it praised CBHS. We wondered, how did CBHS award this contract to Davis Jaw and Associates? Well, property records showed that the CBHS Director of Research, Evaluation, and Quality Management, a Deborah Sherwood, PhD, resided at the same address as Davis Jaw and co-owned the office building of Davis Jaw and Associates. We reported this to you and to the whistleblower program. this undisclosed personal and business relationship back in September of 2009. Now, 22 months later, your investigation is still ongoing. This matter needs your attention for three reasons. Number one, in 2009, Davis Jaw received another city contract to help CBHS for $1.9 million. The same potential conflicts of interest that existed when this major contract went to Davis Jaw rather than to UCLA, these were the conflicts that we had reported almost 2 years before. And lastly, we were driven out of Laguna Honda within 6 months of filing this complaint. So please, responsiveness to whistleblower complaints. Thank you.
Good evening, Thomas Piccarello. A couple of things. First, you know, I see that on agenda item number 3, you have a possible consideration of responding to the grand jury's sleeping watchdog report. I think your agenda is too loaded tonight to seriously address all the issues raised in the grand jury report. So what I would suggest to you is that you have a special meeting just on the grand jury report and the recommendations. And secondly, let me say this. The Sunshine Ordinance Task Force sent you an order of determination May 16th regarding a complaint I have against Ann Cronenberg. A couple days ago, I got a phone call from your staff to begin the investigation. You should not take 4-8 weeks to begin an investigation on an order of determination. The lawyers on this committee are aware of the legal maxim that justice delayed is justice denied. When you deny someone access to public records or public comment, you're doing a disservice and you're not living up to your responsibilities that you were appointed to do. Thank you.
Hi, Kimo Crossman here. I actually wanted to say, I wasn't going to speak now, but after I heard what Mr. Piccarello said, I actually agree with him. The grand jury report is actually has a lot of detailed feedback, and just to have it as one agenda item of an otherwise busy meeting, I think would not allow for a full and complete discussion. Certainly, I have input on a lot of the items, and 3 minutes won't allow for that if you have them all called as one agenda item. So I would recommend having a special meeting, as Mr. Piccarello recommended as well.
Good afternoon. I'm Sue Cawthon. I have an item later on the agenda, but I really did want to say something about the grand jury report. I didn't have a chance to read all of it, but I do think it's enormously important. I'm a member of the Sunshine Task Force, and some of the things that it recommends regarding Sunshine is something that strikes a chord with me. So I do hope that you have it at a time when we can all come down and talk and give it the attention that it deserves. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is consideration of ethics complaint 01-100115. Would someone from the staff like to introduce this matter?
Good evening, commissioners. I'm Garrett Chatfield for the public. We've calendared this matter for you to determine the applicability of Section 6734 under the Sunshine Ordinance. I just want to clarify, this is not a probable cause hearing. That would come later, depending on what your decision is tonight. There are two issues that are within the memo. Basically, if 6734 can be enforced against the Commission Secretary, Sue Blackman, and whether or not 6734 can be enforced against the Commission President, Jewel Gomez. The memo outlines our understanding of how it should be applied, but of course, that's a policy decision for you to make. Before you begin your discussion, I would like to play the video for you just so you understand what conduct occurred so that you can see for yourself what was outlined in the memorandum. And then after that, I'll happily answer any question you have regarding what staff's proposed.
Thank you.
And just for the members of the public, I've put this audio on as loud as I can, but it isn't very loud, so just be aware.
Commissioner Hand, can you see from there?
Good afternoon. I'm Sue Coffin. I'm talking about North Beach, but not about design. I think you all know that I had a coalition of groups who are concerned about the present plan. And I've passed around.
And you have, Madam, too. We can do that item.
I briefly talked to the city attorney. And
this is a North Beach item. Will you hold it until we get to it, please?
North Beach item.
Will you hold it until we get to it, please?
The North Beach item.
You hold it? Are you not listening to me?
The North
Beach.
Sit down! The North
Beach
item is about
design. Please sit down. Thank you.
So just after staff reviewed that, we do feel a violation of Ms. Cawthon's right to public comment occurred. The issue is whether or not 6734 applies to either Jewel Gomez or Sue Blackman. The way the text of the law reads, it says, complaints involving allegations of willful violations of this ordinance, the Brown Act, or the Public Records Act by elected officials or department heads of the City and County of San Francisco shall be handled by the Ethics Commission. Jewel Gomez is an appointed official by the mayor. Sue Blackman is not an elected official or a department head. So the matter is with you to determine how you want to read that section.
Would someone from the task force or Sue Kaufman, do they have any comment on this before we discuss amongst the commissioners and open it up to public comment?
Hi, I'm Sue Coffin. I just wanted to let you know I fell on Saturday night and banged my face up. But my doctor actually said you should be resting in bed, but I really wanted to come today because I think this is an extremely important issue, not just about the incident that you just witnessed, but the general subject of proper treatment to the public. And one of the reasons I'm a longtime member of the Sunshine Task Force is that I believe passionately in public participation in government. By the same token, I believe that government should treat people with respect, whether they agree with them or not. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Coffin, perhaps we can hear from Ms. Gomez.
Microphone, please.
Perhaps we can. If we have further questions, maybe we can recall you, if that's okay with you.
Okay. Will I have an opportunity to make public comment?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Good afternoon again. I am still Richard Nee, and I chaired the hearing of the task force at which the order of determination that resulted in the order of determination that has come before you and is the subject of the hearing that you are about to embark on. Let me just point something out to you that I want to take issue with something in Mr. St. Croix's and Mr. Moe's and Mr. Chatfield's analysis. In which it is said that there is no named respondent in that complaint. And that technically might be true. However, in the order of determination that the task force issued, the revised version of August 13, 2009, in the section titled Findings of Fact and Conclusions of Law, first sentence, based on a DVD recording of the meeting, a transcript of the meeting and testimony presented by Sue Cawthon, as well as several members of the task, several members of the public, task force finds that Jewel Gomez willfully violated the ordinance. So even though technically there might have been no respondent named in the complaint, the task force did find that Jewel Gomez violated the ordinance, and I hope that you will use that as guidance going forward. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Nee. Is Ms. Gomez here?
I'm Joel Gomez, president of the Library Commission. Shall I just make a statement?
If you have anything, anything to say, I'm giving you an opportunity to do so.
Okay, thank you. I feel compelled to add some context to your deliberations and to add that the video that you see is not the entire video. What you miss at the beginning is me asking the previous speaker to also sit down and wait for the agenda item, because unlike this commission, our commission asks people to speak in general comment only on items that are not on the agenda. As a novelist and playwright, words are my stock in trade, so use of the word willful in the complaint disposition is my primary concern. It implies, incorrectly, a deliberate attempt on my part to violate the Brown Act. My intent on curtailing Ms. Coffin's testimony was the same as when I curtailed the speaker who preceded her, who then politely took her seat and returned when the item came up and spoke on North Beach. I was upholding the policy followed in all previous Library Commission meetings. All elements of a particular topic have traditionally been confined to that agenda item, whether it explicitly said all elements or not. We had traditionally never covered an item in both public comment and again in the specific agenda item. My raising my voice was indecorous. It was a result of Ms. Coffin's refusal to stop speaking when I asked her more than once to reserve her comments for the appropriate agenda item. I was then assured by the deputy city attorney at the meeting that I was correct in asking Ms. Coffin to wait for her agenda item to speak on North Beach. Since I have no idea ahead of time what Ms. Coffin is going to say, there would be no reason for me to stop her speaking because, as she implies, I disagreed with her. But she chose at that particular time to reinterpret our traditional practice and refuse my request for her to wait her turn. In doing so, I felt she showed great disrespect for the commission and its process. I felt it was my responsibility to uphold the protocol and not allow a new precedent to be set, which might have some audience members speaking twice on a single item. What was willful, however, I feel, was the task force deliberate scheduling of their meetings when they had been informed that, unfortunately, neither I nor the commission secretary would be available, and being informed quite ahead of time that the particular day they chose for a meeting was also the day that my board of directors meets, and I have a difficult time not attending that meeting, and still they continued to schedule, or the commission secretary indicating she had a planned vacation scheduled, so could not come to the upcoming meeting, could it be delayed. But they decided it should be scheduled at any rate. I did attend a meeting. I testified. I acknowledged that the wording of the introduction to public comment might be misleading. I had the wording changed so there would be no further misinterpretation. This rewording was immediately approved by the deputy city attorney. Further action seemed unnecessary since the original dispute about the appropriate time for general public comment versus comment on an agenda item seemed to have been clarified with the new language. Despite this tangle of disagreements evidenced by this complaint and the calculated and repeated provocation by some members of the public, it is my honor to serve the people of the City of San Francisco and the San Francisco Public Library. Thank you.
My name is Zach Stewart,
sorry,
and I'd
sir.
Like to...
Excuse me, sir. We're going to have public comment about the matter after the commission... We're going to have public comment about this matter after the commission deliberates on it. We wanted to hear from the those who were directly
okay.
involved.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments? Commissioner Ward, do you have...
Well, I think I do. I mean, I think I saw something different on the video than what Ms. Gomez stated. I saw Ms. Coffin trying to explain what she was hoping to say, and frankly, Ms. Gomez losing it. I don't know whether Ms. Coffin would have retreated and taken her seat after she said her piece about what she was trying to say, but it wasn't a very civil exchange from the chair. And it's hard for me to understand how someone sitting in the chair would treat a member of the public in that way. I've been on this commission for now 6 years, and I've never once seen anyone in either of these chairs treat a member of the public in that way. On the other hand, I've taken a lot of abuse from the podium, yet I've never seen anyone react on this side in that way, and I think it's unconscionable that someone who's an appointed official or an elected official in the city would respond to a citizen in that manner.
Other comments from the commissioners?
I have a question. Ultimately, did Ms. Coffin have a chance to express her views under the future agenda item, or not? Were you finally able to state what you wanted to state at that particular meeting?
No, I never was. The gentleman said, the problem was that Ms. Gomez did not let me tell her what I wanted to say. She just assumed that it was something connected to the agenda item 2, which it was not. So therefore, I was unable to speak generally in public comment about an issue involving citywide libraries. And as I say, Ms. Gomez, for some reason, assumed that I was going to talk about item 2, which was peer review of the design of the North Beach Library. And that was not my intention at all. But as I said before, she simply wouldn't let me tell her that.
And did you have comments about the North Beach Library during that library agenda item, though?
You mean the second agenda?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So you did speak.
I spoke about
on that topic.
Yeah, but I didn't get to speak about my issue regarding preservation of citywide libraries. That was what I wanted to talk about in general public comment.
Thank you.
While we have Ms. Coffin up here, do any of the other commissioners have questions for her?
Has Ms. Gomez ever apologized to you for the tone of her
No.
response?
No, I was really blown away because I was the founder and chair of the Board of Supervisors Library Advisory Committee. I've been coming to library commissions since 1988. I chaired a library support group called the Council of Neighborhood Libraries. I know, as a member of the Sunshine Task Force and a citizen advocate, I know the rules for public comment. I know the rules for general public comment. And I was really overwhelmed when she kind of lost control and just screamed at me. and it had a chilling effect on some of the folks who came down with me because they wanted to talk about item number two, North Beach, but they also had general public comment remarks they wanted to make, but they were afraid to speak. No, neither Ms. Gomez nor the commission has ever even mentioned this subject.
Thank you very much, Ms. Cotton. Ms. Gomez, it looked like you had a response to Commissioner Hahn's question.
Ms. Coffin indicated she was going to speak about North Beach. That was what she started saying. I said, please wait till the North Beach item. She did get up and speak, and she did speak about North Beach. Whether she spoke about what she had originally talked about, I don't recall because I did not see the full tape. But for her to say she did not speak or had no opportunities to speak was incorrect. And I agree with you. I said it was totally indecorous. I felt very assaulted by her because when I'm sitting in this position and you ask someone to sit down, as you've done today, they sat down. There was no question. There was no rebuttal. They sat down. And I felt that was very disrespectful to the commission to keep talking when I say, please hold that until the North Beach item. So, yes, it was inappropriate behavior. I should not have snapped at her. But I thought she was very disrespectful to the commission. If she would like a public apology, I would certainly say, I apologize for that behavior, which my great-grandmother would not have approved. But the point was still on target, as far as I'm concerned.
Ms. Gomez, do any members of the commission have any questions for her while we have her up here? Thank you. Any further comments from the commissioners on this matter? Commissioner Lee?
I mean, I agree with Commissioner Ward 100%. What we saw in the video, I didn't see any assault or disrespect from Ms. Coffin, Ms. Gomez. I don't understand why it would have elicited that reaction, but even regardless of whether someone, a member of the public, is even borderline disrespectful, that was completely unacceptable for someone in Ms. Gomez's position as chair of the commission to behave in the way that she did. And I think that is a willful violation. I know we still have yet to talk about the interpretation of the statute on its application to individuals. But I think there was a violation of the sunshine in the sense that it was it was unacceptable behavior.
Commissioner Studley.
I'll just add briefly that I agree with both commissioners on that point completely. There is a special responsibility that we hold to be sure that we understand what a speaker wants to do. We now have Ms. Coffin's word for what she intended to say, and that it was never possible to get that during the hearing. I have no problem with Ms. Gomez wanting to treat each speaker in a similar way, but without giving her an opportunity to explain the point of her comment at that moment, she could never get that. But I am very troubled by the jurisdictional issue, and it would be very frustrated, but I don't see a way around coming to the conclusion that an unacceptable thing happened, but that we may not have the tools to address it given the statute. So I'm happy to talk about that whenever you want, Mr. Chair, but it feels like a very tight situation with a problem where we are not the ones who have the solution available to us.
I concur with that. I too am troubled that we don't, because, like all of you have said, this appears to be a willful violation. Especially having seen the video, the notion that the chair felt disrespected, given the response, I think is not credible. Are there any further comments with respect to?
But there must be something that we can do, even if it's not within the ordinance. Mm-hmm. She was appointed by someone. Maybe there's a letter that we can write to that person expressing our feeling about what happened. And requesting that whoever the appointing authority is reconsider her service on the commission, and perhaps it doesn't hold any authority, but we can at least do that.
I agree, Commissioner Ward, and I think one thing we may do is, as the staff suggested, but with a slight modification, refer the matter to the mayor with a statement that Ms. Gomez's conduct willfully violated public testimony requirements of Sunshine Ordinance Section 67.15.
I would support that. I think, I think the staff recommendation makes sense, and I would support your addition to that we make it a very strong a letter in which we were very clear about what we have found. I was just not heading there because we hadn't talked about whether we in fact agreed or saw some way that that we could assert jurisdiction. But I don't hear any analysis that would get us to that. It's I think after we determine how we want to handle that recommendation and if there is support for a letter, whether to think about in the appropriate process, whether we should have, whether there's something flawed about our jurisdiction, whether this is a hole that we want to fill, but obviously we can't do that under our rules tonight. We're limited to thinking about how to bring this to the attention of the appointing authority, and I would support your recommendation.
It's just that, because of the way the drafting is of the ordinance is, it appears there might have been an intent for this enforcement power to exist, but whatever drafting error didn't occur to it. But if you know, you could determine that your jurisdiction was supposed to be there, if you're comfortable with that. But it's because it's not specifically stated, staff couldn't take that across the finish line. It's a policy decision that you may wish to.
Is that something that we could address tonight, or was it not noticed? And
we
have
change
to do
the
it
policy
future?
Tonight, but you can determine that that's what you think should happen, and we would have to do more work on it.
I'm sorry. I don't quite follow, Mr. St. Croix. So are you saying that you believe there may be an argument that the policy rationale would provide a different meaning? Okay.
As everyone's noted, the ordinance itself leaves a lot of blanks about the Ethics Commission's jurisdiction, and the staff's memo indicates the same. The proposed regulations regarding enforcement of the Sunshine Ordinance, which the Commission considered in May of last year, and which Mr. Nee referenced earlier, address some of those issues and get into specifics about how you can enforce the ordinance, what penalties might apply, what the procedures would be, and against whom you can enforce. It's been our recommendation that because of the ambiguities and in the ordinance itself, that the commission not impose any specific penalties that aren't explicitly set out in the ordinance until those regulations have been adopted, because the charter grants you the authority to interpret the ordinance by regulation, which is promulgated in this certain process under the charter. Is that?
So you're saying when we come back to looking at the regulation, this may be, we may sufficiently have addressed it some time ago or have an opportunity then to make sure it would apply, we'd have the tools we wanted in this situation.
Exactly. I think you at least started to address it in those regs, and I think maybe even fully addressed the concerns that you're raising today.
So staff presented to you what we think are your alternatives under the current regs.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I understand. At this time, I'd like to open the matter up to public comment.
Good afternoon again, Commissioners. Patrick Minette, Shaw. I would like to just sway you from the mistaken assumption that 67.34 applies only to elected oaths or officials and department heads. The sentence clearly says that it applies as well to, quote, or other managerial employees. You don't have to quibble about the jurisdiction of this. The Sunshine Task Force ruled that there was a violation of 67.34. Your job isn't to discuss jurisdiction. Your job is to discuss enforcement. You don't get to decide whether it applies to other managerial employees or not. Sunshine Ordinance is quite clear on that sentence, although I would admit that 6734 does have a little bit of ambiguity in it that needs to be resolved when the Sunshine Task Force moves forward revisions to the Sunshine Ordinance. As it is, you don't have a jurisdictional issue that you can drive a BART train through here. You just have to rule that 6734 was violated. That's all you have to do.
Good afternoon. My name is Peter Warfield. I'm Executive Director of Library Users Association and have been attending Library Commission meetings pretty much without fail for more than a decade, and certainly attended this one. First of all, I want to say that it's unfortunate that you were only shown the very short section without the context that has been referred to by the President of the Library Commission with respect to the prior speaker, and nobody has said anything about the speaker who followed. So I have a tape recording of the meeting. I get all of the recordings of the meetings, and I can play you, if you like, or somebody else could, a 3-minute segment that includes the prior speaker, Ms. Cawthon, and the following speaker, who was myself. Let me say that in the first place, the prior speaker was treated very gently and very politely and spoke quite a bit longer than Ms. Cawthon, by my timing, 24 or 25 seconds to Ms. Cawthon's 15. She was then very politely asked by the president if she would mind, or words to that effect, holding her comment until the North Beach item was taken up. And she agreed, adding another 5 seconds. But I just want to say, and you can hear it on the tape, and she goes on and is allowed to go on for a full 5 seconds saying, I really support the North Beach Branch Library tear down and so on and so forth and what the Library Commission is doing and so on, what the library is doing. So she was permitted to speak much longer than Ms. Cawthon. She was allowed to continue after being asked to sit down without interruption. Ms. Cawthon, by contrast, was treated quite differently. She was interrupted much faster, with considerable vehemence, as you saw, and was not allowed to say anything at all once the interruption from the president began, and essentially was shouted down and forced to sit down. If you look at the piece you did see, you could see something that I don't recall ever seeing before, and that is that the deputy city attorney present at the meeting got up and circled around toward the president while this scene with Ms. Cawthon was occurring. She stopped when Ms. Cawthon sat down and before reaching the president. So I don't know where the president gets to say the city attorney assured her she was correct. I certainly would encourage you to ask her when was that said, because the city attorney never physically got to her. I've been to plenty of Library Commission meetings over the decade and more, and the city attorney speaks into the microphone in normal circumstances. The following speaker was myself, and because of the tension that had arisen, I spoke very gently and very carefully. But I informed them that what had happened was a violation of the law.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Speaking as an anonymous citizen, of course, stop the hate, the corporate rape of the public library. Don't give money to the Friends and Foundation. Don't accept money from the Friends and Foundation. The first thing you need to understand is that this was not an anomaly. This is one step in a long process to provide open government and public participation at Library Commission meetings. The library is presently required to provide agendas, to allow public comment, to make copies available of documents that are under discussion. This is the result of the efforts of many people over many years. They hate it. You have no idea how they hate it. They hate democracy, reason, decency, and everything connected to it. The predecessor of Ms. Gomez was Ms. Coffin, was Mr. Coulter. And Mr. Coulter used to use what we now call le mot de Coulter all the time, since you have to have this explained to you. Le mot de Coulter is bullshit. That may sound a little funny, but when's the last time somebody chairing a public meeting referred to you as bullshit? This is not in order to enforce class barriers. In fact, the Library Commission has been referred to been indicted by grand jury reports, controller audits, post-documency evaluations. They received strongly worded letters from the district attorney's office, and they were even sued once by the California Attorney General based on a complaint from me. They don't want the accountability in the future that's been visited upon them in the past. Of course, they don't like accountability. Criminals are not supposed to like accountability. There has been solid academic work done which shows that belittling people categorically in this way is a mechanism by which people with moneyed interests are promoted at the expense of people who don't have those moneyed interests and who are being disenfranchised. This is a mechanism that is part of their long history of a policy of suppressing the truth and suppressing open discussion because of their private interests. They have not made any contention that they are honest or responsible in any way. What does the Library Commission claim? That they drive crazy people even crazier as part of some sport? Yeah, that's some defense. We should close by honoring Sue Coffin. It takes a lot to stand up to these powerful, ruthless crooks with resources of that level, and as far as I'm concerned, Sue Coffin is a hero. Thank you very much.
Commissioners, Ray Hartz, Director of San Francisco Open Government, and I'm confused in the staff report why Ms. Blackman is even in there. Ms. Blackman is an employee of the Library Commission and works at the direction of Ms. Gomez and the Library Commission. Why she is there trying to defend someone else's behavior and actions is a mystery to me. I think it is, number one, cowardly to send someone else to defend me in front of a city commission for my actions. And I assume that Ms. Gomez did that because she knew she had no leg to stand on and didn't want to be publicly embarrassed in front of the task force. Making up all these specious remarks about, oh, well, we couldn't make this meeting and they couldn't make that meeting, their considerations are the only ones there. I showed up for a meeting on a Library Commission complaint three separate occasions, and it was continued for one reason or another, and I came back. That's what the obligation of a complainant is. I think the same obligation applies to the respondent. In fact, the Sunshine Ordinance says they have a duty to respond. But why Ms. Blackman should be charged? She is either told to go or told not to go. She is told what to say or what not to say, and it is all from Ms. Gomez. Now, going back to some questions that you've already asked, I think where this is willful is the fact that this happened in 2009. It has been more than 2 years, And at any point in time, Ms. Gomez could have picked up the phone, talked to Ms. Coffin, and said, you know, I was probably wrong, I'm sorry, and if you'd like, I'll admit it. But she didn't do that. She didn't even bother to participate, and that's what is really willful. When someone takes you to a task force like this, the Sunshine Task Force, or a committee like this body, and you show so much disrespect for the rule of law that you won't even bother to show up or send a representative, I think that just shows a total disregard for the rights of the citizens of this city. And to drag this out for 2 damn years, when at any point in time she could have picked up that phone and made an apology, and I know Ms. Coffin, had she done so, I think Ms. Coffin would have been very generous and said, as long as you acknowledge that it was a mistake, enough said. And that's what somebody has to do, and why I mentioned the David Brooks article. If you're going to sit in one of those seats, you have to accept the responsibility for your own actions. And if you're not willing to do that, you don't deserve the seat, because you're not willing to live up to your oath, and you are not willing to serve the needs of the citizens of this city. And you might as well just admit it and step down and let somebody sit in that seat that will do it.
Good afternoon, commissioners. It has indeed been 2 years. I had to refresh my memory by the letter that I wrote. I think my letter to the mayor probably started this. I came late that day to the commission hearing, and I was walking down the aisle, and this little small figure was in front of the microphone, and she got out two words, and Ms. Gomez started yelling at her. Well, she didn't yell the first time. I thought it was something like 20 times, and her voice got louder and louder. She was completely, totally out of control. It was a lot more than indecorous. I guess she thought a while before deciding to bring that word to you as a way of apologizing. It was a woman that was out of control. I've been to a few meetings in my time, and frequently members of the public get out of control, and you and authority kind of get used to that, but the last thing we expect is for somebody in a position of authority for that to happen to them. It really was, it sent a chill down my spine. I'm not the only person to whom that happened. Another person that I saw this morning in a meeting, he had another meeting now, he said the same thing. It just chilled us, scared us, chilled us. She was completely out of control. It's a lot more than indecorous. You probably have seen my letter. I assume that you get packets of some sort or another. Anyway, I wrote on the 14th of June after finding out. I wasn't even clear what Ms. Gomez's name was, and I needed to find out who appointed her and like that. So I called somebody who knew more than I did. I think it was either the first or second time I'd ever been to a Library Commission meeting, and I learned that the mayor had appointed her. So I wrote to Gavin Newsom about it and said that he should give some mind to rethinking that particular appointment. She was completely out of control, and it was frightening. Thank you.
Hi, Commissioners. Kimo Crossman. First of all, I want to emphasize what someone else said earlier. Today, your duty is to enforce. The Sunshine Task Force is given the power to adjudicate these matters. They've found a willful violation. They referred it to you for enforcement. So while I found it interesting to see the video and, you know, have basically input from Ms. Coffin and Ms. Gomez, the reality is that's already happened, and I think you're going down a slippery slope if you're going to re-adjudicate everything that comes to you from Sunshine. Your duty is to enforce the matters, and as they're referred to you by the body, the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, which is given that power to adjudicate these matters. Since they have found that a willful violation occurred, even when Ms. Gomez was unable to attend a few of the meetings before, you know, she was unable to accommodate her schedule to come to them, but eventually they adjudicated against her. So I would recommend that you take strong action against this person. Well, I think we heard a partial apology tonight, but the word that after Ms. Gomez said she realized her language was indecorous, and then she used the word but, and then described why she thought that the member of the public was not respecting the commission. Well, the reality is as soon as you say but in an apology, it means you're really, you know, you're not really apologizing. The but counts as what was said before that. And the other thing, too, was when Ms. Gomez said that the city attorney said what she had done was appropriate. Well, the city attorney is just, you know, that's just their opinion on some matter. Probably wasn't in writing, for one. And for two, we all know that you guys make the policy decisions. You don't always accept the advice from the city attorney as well. You make your own decisions, too. And ultimately, task force made the ruling. They're the body that's empowered to make those rulings. And it's your responsibility to enforce them. Thank you.
Commissioners, Thomas Piccirillo again. Well, your release being consistent. So this is number 19 order of determination that you have denied coming from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. The reason that Ms. Gomez can display the demeanor that you saw on the monitor tonight is because you have no accountability in the system. The Ethics Commission is to be there to have accountability. Clearly, there was a serious and willful violation by Ms. Gomez. You talked generically about not having the tools. It would be more interesting to hear the specifics as to why you feel you have not the tools to uphold the order of determination by the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. So I urge you to reconsider your motion and uphold the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force and find a serious in violation by Ms. Gomez, and also refer her to the mayor's office who appointed her to her position. Thank you.
My name is Zach Stewart. I've been testifying off and on in front of commissions for 50 years, and I am absolutely sure that all of our commissions are the lifeblood of the city. A friend of mine who is a retired controller of the city and county of San Francisco said, when I said I'm going down to testify at the library commission, don't bother. Said I went down there when I was controller to point out that they, their records showed that they completely remodeled a library that hadn't even been started. They paid no attention to me. You won't get very far if you go before the library commission. My one experience of going before the library commission was anybody that agrees with them, ooh, and anybody that doesn't agree with them is like, ugh. I felt like a dog, and I decided I didn't need to waste my time with that commission anymore. It's a very arrogant organization, loaded with money, set-asides, and all sorts of money, a big PR operation, and they crush anybody that has any information that isn't something they agree with. You just saw an example of how that works. Believe me, speak out. The Ethics Commission has a role here.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Luis Herrera. I'm the city librarian for the San Francisco Public Library. And I just simply want to offer a few comments on behalf of President Gomez. She was appointed to the Library Commission in February of 2005, was reappointed last year by Mayor Newsom for a four-year term. She was elected president in February 2008 and reelected again in 2009, 2010, and 2011. She has earned the respect of her commissioners, the staff, and is a leader not only in the LGBT community, but the community at large. And I've been the city librarian during her entire tenure, and I can say that during the entire term of office, she has been fair and professional. She allows all voices to be heard, and she also does it in a respectful and dignified manner. And what you saw here was not the Jewel Gomez that has given many, many years of service to our community, and any action simply would diminish her contributions to the city and county of San Francisco. Thank you.
Sue Coffin again. I'm really disappointed in what the city librarian said. I mean, it seems like he doesn't care either that I was treated so badly. You know, I kind of agree with what Mr. Hart said, that, you know, if she hadn't screamed and shouted at me, I might have just let it go. But when she kind of lost control and just refused to stop screaming at me at high decibels, I thought, this behavior cannot go unremarked. It is not right for a public body to treat a citizen in that fashion. So I certainly hope, you know, while we at the Sunshine Task Force are working on 67.34 to make it more, to clean, lighten, brighten up some of the gray areas and make it a little easier for you to refer things on the basis of it. I was around when the ordinance was being drafted, and our intent definitely in 67.34 was to give the Ethics Commission the authority to enforce violations of the ordinance. So I really do hope that you will go ahead with your plan to send a letter to the mayor, because I really think, you know, I'm not out to get Ms. Gomez, far from it. But I really do think that there should be some attention paid to the way she treated me. Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners. I just want to put a little note of reality back into this. You did see, I think, the videotape. You are aware of what happened. People do make mistakes. We all make mistakes. It has been 2 years before this got to this point. This conversation that took place 2 years ago, and it's taken all this time to come before this body, and you want to hesitate about punishment? You want to listen to this librarian about this woman and her role as whatever she is? I was a rather strong advocate of the library back when the UMaine was formed, and I'm a veteran of the Mr. Culture Wars. If I had known that this body existed and that you were charged with bringing these people to some kind of heel, back then, you would have been very sick of me because I'd have been here at least every week. Mr. Coulter created this nightmare that the current librarian has dipped into in this particular episode that I may remind you again is 2 years old without action yet. We really need this. If this city is serious about being a city, this is just one conversation between a city librarian and a member of a person who wanted to speak. And it's taken us 2 years to get to this point to resolve anything. I don't know which world you live in, but in my world, if you devote that kind of time to something this small and still do not act, you really shouldn't even be here. Thank you very much.
Commissioners, any further deliberations?
I guess I just need a clarification. So in staff memo, it says Ms. Gomez is not a managerial city employee, correct? And so she is not a managerial city employee. So the issue isn't really whether the code, whether we can enforce against a managerial city employee or a department head or just department heads and elected officials. It's just that she doesn't fall under any of the three categories in 6734. So I guess that's a question for staff. Is that correct?
That's correct. Neither Sue Blackman, who was the named person in the referral, who's the commission secretary, she could be a managerial city employee, but then let me get the text of the code, because the two sentences, one includes it and then one specifically omits it. So the first sentence, the willful failure of an elected official, department head, or managerial city employee to discharge any duties imposed by Sunshine Ordinance shall be official misconduct. But then for us to do anything, it seems that the only people we can enforce anything against is the elected official and the department head. So it actually takes managerial city employee out of it. And Ms. Gomez is none of them. She's an appointed official. She's not a city employee.
Right. So the ambiguity in the code has nothing to do, I mean, just Ms. Gomez doesn't fall
correct.
Under any of the three categories.
That is correct.
In 6734.
Correct.
So, I mean, I think I would support the letter, the idea of the strongly worded letter to the mayor.
I feel the same way. It's as though, I mean, I understand that to some members of the public, this may well sound like lawyers and commissioners arguing over a technicality. And I am very sorry that it so happens that one of the first chances that we have to address an issue referred to us by the task force is one that has this kind of complexity, because I think it obscures the fact that we take this very seriously. This is akin, in my mind, to the situation we would have if a member of the audience at this or any other commission that had to follow these rules had stopped another member of the audience from speaking. It would be unfortunate. It would be a willful and inappropriate act. But if it didn't fall within the powers that we have, then we wouldn't be able to address it using these enforcement tools. What we're trying to do is use the only one that we, the only tool that we have, that was our reference to tools, by bringing this to the attention of the mayor who made the appointment with as serious and expression of concern as we can, and at the same time address the resolution of the ambiguity to the extent it exists, and to think about this and situations that might, I hope there won't be others like this, but should a situation arise, whether our rules would allow us to do it. But right now, it doesn't. She is not in a category that we are allowed to handle in this way, and it points up perhaps a shortcoming in the rules, but I see us proposing to do, if we have a majority for it, to do something that would be our best expression of respect for the rules and concern about this action.
Is there a motion?
I'd move that we send a letter to the mayor, if that's who the appointing authority is, expressing our the views that have been expressed here with regard to the conduct of the chair of the library committee. Attach a copy of the tape with it, and recommend that the mayor consider removing this person as his appointee to the library committee.
Can I suggest that part of your proposal is that staff draft this letter, but that the chair be empowered to have final approval?
Sure, as long as it contains the things that I've just said.
Yeah. Is that okay with you?
That's fine with me.
I was just going to second the motion. Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The next item on the agenda is consideration of possible response to the 2010-2011 civil grand jury report. Mr. St. Croix, would you like to introduce this matter?
Yeah. So with part of the process when the grand jury, civil grand jury, issues a report is that there is a response required. And we, the Ethics Commission, is required to respond to all seven findings. So I drafted a response for your consideration. At this point, if you wanted to have any discussion, ask me any questions, make suggestions, so that the language is representative of the viewpoint of the commissioners and not just the executive director.
Commissioners, any questions for Mr. St. Croix with respect to the draft response to the civil grand jury's report?
I wonder if there's anyone who feels as I do with regard to the request of several members of the public that this matter be put over for a special meeting to so that there's more time to discuss and have the public weigh in on our response.
I understand that we have a deadline by which
August 15th.
You're supposed to respond.
And what happens if we miss the deadline?
Doesn't look.
I'd recommend not.
Doesn't look that.
Commissioner Studley.
Yeah. I agree with the notion, to the extent that at least part of it is, that there are issues of policy that we may want to address related to some of these matters. But I have a couple of maybe practical thoughts. One is it may be possible to bring them forward on a regular agenda with respect to those items, because we could say to the grand jury that we are considering a particular one, or this is where it stands right now, but the commission will be going through them systematically, either along with related issues or in the order that we think they warrant in terms of priority. So I guess this suggests I'd rather respond to them to the extent we can. Some of the answers were it's the will of the voters. Some others are this is what we're doing now, but we could look at it, rather than step away from it completely and delay a response. There are some I would very much like to talk to, and I would defer to the chair's decision, you know the rest of the agenda better, whether you would want to have any conversation tonight about this, either both to identify our comfort level with the draft and whether there are issues that we want to return to later. But I fear that it might be difficult to have a special meeting with a good attendance by commissioners in the window between now and August 15th. It's a long enough window, but it's one that has a lot of potential vacation and travel, and I just wonder whether we would be missing the opportunity that we have if we didn't discuss it at all.
Commissioner Hayon, looks like you.
I totally agree, and I do think that it's with Commissioner Ward. I think that one concern that I have, or an interest that I have, is that I think that the Ethics Commission has an opportunity to provide educational opportunities, if you will, for the public in San Francisco. And I think that a special meeting about the grand jury report could be one of those opportunities to discuss what the report has said and to hear from the public, one way or another. I don't think that precludes our beginning a discussion of how we should respond or could respond to the grand jury, but I would like to see some kind of public hearing where we can hear from the public and further discuss, what is involved in the report at length.
I'm going to make a presumption that if the commission doesn't finish its work on this by August 15th, a preliminary response would satisfy the requirements under the law, with the understanding that work is ongoing and that a document would be forthcoming that would further respond to the report.
I actually don't know the answer to that. I think it's the penal code that requires a response in 60 days. I just don't know exactly what the grand jury's response would be if we give a preliminary report.
The purpose of putting this on the agenda today was because of the deadline. I am somewhat concerned that setting a special meeting may actually not lead to as much attendance as we have today. This is a very well-attended meeting, and so I am concerned about that. Putting it on the agenda for next month would be cutting it pretty close because our meeting is scheduled for
August 8th.
So therein lies the problem. Perhaps we could spend some time deliberating on the issue today, provide some guidance to staff, and then continue the matter at the next regularly noticed hearing on August 8th, thereby giving the staff more of an opportunity to come up with a more finished product, perhaps, and then hearing from the commissioners and the public at that time.
I would certainly agree with that.
Is that acceptable to the rest of the commissioners?
Yes. Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Then substantive comments from the commissioners with respect to the draft response. You know, let's do it finding by finding, if that's acceptable to the rest of you. So the first finding with respect to the fixed request that there be a fixed fine structure.
Will you take public comment finding by finding through the chair?
I think we will not take public comment finding
well,
by
that's
finding.
Not quite fair.
Well, like I said, we'll have another opportunity to address the issue at the August meeting. So
we will have public comment, though.
Yes, we will have public comment. It won't be finding by finding today. To the extent there's additional public comment, then the public will have an opportunity in August. With respect to the first finding, comments from the commissioners?
I would just mention on this one that I didn't have edits to the issue. It is a subject that has been of interest to us, and the question of consistency, as those who've been attending the meeting over time, is one that we share with the grand jury, that the question of how fines are determined and just as it is for judges is a very complicated one, and it's one that we've been concerned about. So I think it might be worth saying in the response, simply indicating that it is an area that we agree is important and we have discussed and expect to return to because it is something that we watch. We don't have all that many matters that come before us, and they come before us on very, very different violations, factual circumstances, funds involved, and it's an area that's been a challenge to get a handle on. But I think we could reflect a little bit more than this answer does, the degree to which we agree that it's important. I also do not find the specific always apply the maximal allowable fine. We've had some situations in which that would have seemed to me very inappropriate, and I think we were thoughtful in not doing so. But I think we could reflect a little bit more continuing attention to this that would be both true to our history and would, for me, properly reflect the seriousness with which we take this item.
I would concur with that, and I do think that there has to be a balance with respect to this issue, and I agree that a zero tolerance or a fixed fine in all cases is not really in the interest of the public. It's not in the interest of those that we're regulating in this respect.
I was wondering whether the staff could consider, whether it was practical to consider guidelines for fines.
I was actually going to ask that, whether there were guidelines that are being used or that are used, or whether there's a scale or range that's used in determining fines.
I mean, we try to look at similarities between prior cases to give us some basis for these, but when there's nothing comparable, the process is a balancing test between the level of public harm and you know, the prior history of the actors involved and so on.
Any other comments on the first finding? Comments on the second finding and the response thereto? I would propose that the sentence following the italicized task force be omitted. I think this is also an area that I think with all of these, I agree with Commissioner Studley that we should have a caveat that we are working through these issues, and this is a, you know, this is certainly the response that we a response to the report and one that we believe in, but that these are continuing issues, all of them of concern to us and things that we would like to address, because we always, of course, want to improve. Any other comments with respect to finding two? Any comments with respect to finding three? I agree with the draft on this. I mean, I don't know that it's practical to require immediate response upon the close of the 14-day window. But I think we should look into whether we can do that and should respond as quickly as practicable following the close of that window. Any further comments on finding three? Finding four, any comments from the commissioners?
I think number four is well said. This was the determination of the voters that this was a degree of separation of functions and independence that was that seemed at the outset to be workable, and it's up to the voters to make a judgment about whether they want a different methodology.
Any other comments with respect to finding number four? I agree with you, Commissioner Studley. Finding number five. Any comments with respect to this? Commissioner Studley?
Yeah. I discussed this issue with the grand jury when I met with them, and I was left thinking that they had raised some interesting points, and I would be interested on this one to return to the matter of how we handle these. Not because I think we are doing what they think we're doing, but simply because, one, because there are appearance issues about whether a negative option is just too easy a bar. I read every single one I get. I read it in time to convey my view. And I have sometimes, but I will say rarely, asked for something to be calendared because I have found that the staff understands the standards, that these are items that seem to me appropriate for the treatment that is being recommended, but I feel no hesitation in saying that it should be calendared if I have either a specific issue with the recommendation or believe it fits into a larger pattern that we ought to discuss and shouldn't just leave to be handled that way. So this one, for me, rather than stand up for the current process, seems to be one where we might do well to just think about what the best way is to carry out our action, carry out our responsibility to make that determination, but also not to feel that simply because of the mechanics of doing it that we are lying down and letting somebody tell us what to do, because I don't believe that is what's happening, but the way that we do it might create the wrong impression. So I think this is one where I would at least like to suggest that we look at that process and whether it's a tweak or a more substantial, you know, think about how we might do that going forward.
Any further comments from the commissioners?
And let me just add, and I appreciate getting the well-substantiated, clear recommendations, and it's partly the homework that makes it possible for me to be able to say there's a reason I want to discuss that one and believe it should be discussed in the commission, or I can follow the logic, the law, the application of the law to the facts, and I'm comfortable with that recommendation.
So I think, Mr. St. Croix, that if you and the staff could go back and look at possible alternative mechanisms for dealing with the complaints, we'd appreciate that. Finding number 6, are there any comments from the commissioners? Oh, I'm sorry. With respect to finding number 5, I had a suggestion, and I understand the language may change here, but in the second to last sentence, I would remove the portion following decisions, so the part, and not rely on the work and potential political leanings of their colleagues to inform their decisions. I would strike that.
Good point.
I'm sorry, comments on finding number 6. Okay, I thought the response there was good. With respect to finding number 7, are there comments from the commissioners?
I would like to know historically the reasons for why these commission meetings are not televised. I think it would be probably a good idea if we can get the funding. I think it's an important enough issue for public perception reasons and other reasons to see if we can televise commission hearings, but I would like to hear about why historically the reasons for not televising hearings.
It's primarily budgetary. We put in a budget request every year. You know, for the past several years, we've been ordered to submit budget reductions. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we would put in a request for the cost of televising is just not practical. And we've never been fully staffed. You know, we made some progress on that, and that's been rolled back and so on. So when I make a budget recommendation, it's always entirely staff-driven.
Mm-hmm. Any further comments with respect to finding number 7? In that case, I'd like to open it up for public comment.
Hi, Kimo Crossman. I'd like to address number 7 first. Lots of departments and other commissions do not pay anything to SFGTV to have their meetings video streamed, so I'm surprised to see that it's a budgeting issue. The Board of Supervisors doesn't pay SFGTV for any of its long, long, long meetings and committee meetings. I'm actually not aware that Mr. St. Croix has even gotten an estimate from what SFGTV might like to charge. But again, many departments and commissions don't pay anything to have their meetings streamed. Some reimburse for the closed captioning, some do not. There's no requirement. And the last time I researched it, which is about 2 years ago, there's no requirement for departments to pay an interdepartmental cost to have meetings covered by SFGTV. You're not paying for your lights. You're not paying for the air conditioning. You're not paying for the room rental. It's just part of the infrastructure here at City Hall. Again, I'm not aware that any estimate has ever been recently gotten from SFGTV to what they would like to be paid. But again, even if there has been, many departments don't pay for it. And obviously, transparency is an important thing to promote. On the issue with regards to finding number two, there's just really so much so much confusing language here trying to defend the fact that really ethics has not really been on the job when it comes to Sunshine Matters. I'll wait and respond to that in more detail when you guys agendize this for another meeting. But obviously, you know, 18 items have not been addressed by ethics, and that's, I think, pretty damning in its own. Thank you.
Commissioners, Ray Hartz, Director, San Francisco Open Government, and I'm going to focus primarily on item number two because that has been my big interest. The bottom line is this report covers the period from 2004 to 2010, which is 7 years. You were sent 18 recommendations from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, hardly a deluge. That is less than three per year. And look at what happened tonight. The one you finally put on here, which is, I think, has to be a sign of a strange coincidence. You get a civil grand jury report saying you're dismissing all the cases. Now, voila, here on this same agenda appears the very first one you have ever heard. Seems a little convenient to me. But the bottom line is, and you can give me the snappy little sighs, what it seems to me is if you had heard one of the 18 prior complaints, we wouldn't be in the position where we were tonight, where you go, oh, we hear the complaint, we think it's awful, but we can't do anything. And maybe we should look sometime in the future to doing something. You've had this responsibility since 1999 when it passed. It said the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force has the hearings and you do the enforcement. So it's not like it came to any big blinding flash of whatever. You've known this has been here, and you have allowed every single time these complaints to be dismissed without a hearing. And now you're getting the one, and you have a hearing, and you're going, oh, surprise, we can't really do anything. That wasn't a surprise. I think you had to have known it all the time. Or am I supposed to assume you're all a bunch of very unintelligent, uninformed people who couldn't figure something like that out? I honestly believe that you had no intention of doing it, and you went along as long as you could, letting Mr. St. Croix play the omnipotent and dismiss these complaints without having them heard because it was just easier than doing your job. And starting out the thing saying, oh, we are hurt by the tenor of the civil grand jury's report. Well, as President Truman said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. And if you think the only people who are going to come here are going to come here and tell you how wonderful you are and what a wonderful job you do, you've gotten used to that. But now you have somebody who is unbiased, somebody who has an opinion that many of us in the public have stated before, and they're actually saying it's true. The reason it has the tenor it has is because if you read the whole report, they can't and were not able to find one good thing to say that you were doing. Not one area where they felt you were exceptional or even to the point where they could mention it. The only things they mentioned were problems. And are you really going to sit there and try to say, well, it's the civil grand jury that it's at fault, just like you try to blame the task force for your lack of enforcement?
Oh, woe is you guys. Whoa. Go back to the drawing board on number two. This is a terrible response. Mr. St. Croix, it's a really terrible response. The grand jury noted that this commission's failure to enforce the task force weakens the goal of open government. I know you don't want to be doing that because you people have an ethical bone in your body, right? On April 26th, the task force ruled in my favor on complaint 113, whatever it is. On June 14th, SOTF issued an order of determination on that case, ordering release of the records within 5 business days. But on June 24th, Mr. St. Croix, in his omniscient role, flatly refused, telling the SOTF that due to their processes, you guys aren't going to comply. You don't get to choose their processes. You're a different commission. On May 18th, the task force also ruled in my favor on complaint 1114. On June 7th, they issued another order of determination on 14, ordering again release of the records within 5 days. But on June 13th, Mr. St. Croix pulled out his special little hat. And he told the task force, or implied to the task force, that he wasn't going to comply with 14 either. No wonder the grand jury cited you for agreeing to dismiss all of the cases that had been referred to you without a hearing. Not one hearing in all these years. Maybe it's time for a new executive director. Different leadership. Do you guys get to do his review? Make recommendations on who the executive director is? Something is seriously wrong with absolutely no enforcement. I said this before. You guys aren't supposed to enforce. You're not supposed to retry. Ray Hartz told you the same thing. When these referrals come to you, you're not supposed to go digging for whether there weren't enough facts for the Sunshine Task Force to have arrived at their decision. They made a decision, and your job is to enforce it, period, not to retry it. I think even the deputy city attorneys know that. I think the deputy city attorneys are taught that in deputy city attorney school.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is David Lumen, and I'm a campaign treasurer. I had wanted to respond to the civil grand jury report myself. I saw no clear protocol for doing that. So I would make my comments to you and hope that you will append them to your remarks. First of all, their report is so methodologically flawed as to vitiate every single one of their conclusions regarding campaign finance. As your staff can tell you, there are roughly 4 or 5 of us who do about 80% of the campaign treasury work and about 99% of the continuing treasury work. Not a single one of us was interviewed. As far as I can tell, the civil grand jury did not talk to a single one of your customers. Moreover, I've been involved in grassroots politics since 1974. All right, 40 years, almost 40 years now. I know most of the players. As far as I can tell, they didn't interview anybody who was actively involved in San Francisco politics. I don't think a single one of their conclusions concerning campaign finance and campaign procedures will stand up in the face of actual facts. Secondly, part of what they've concluded is so incredibly elitist, I think, is to spell the death knell for grassroots politics and for populist politics. It's a profoundly ignorant set of conclusions based on the experience of people who are actively involved in politics and based on the experience of people who are your actual customers. Thirdly,
They failed to consider any of the problems involved in the law. They failed to consider any of the ways in which the law and the regulations exercise a chilling effect on politics as we try to do it at a grassroots level in this town. So I hope that you will forward some of those comments to the grand jury. And thank you very much.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Hope Johnson, and I will be speaking on finding two in a moment as a resident of San Francisco, but I'd like to introduce myself first as the newly elected chair of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. And I look forward to working with you over the next year. I know that very soon we'll be working on the regulations for enforcement of our orders of determination, which we faithfully refer to you and have had a hard time coming to an agreement with how they should be handled. First, as a member of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, I would like to commend Chair Herr for requesting that the language that is inflammatory and largely unsubstantiated in an open hearing by the Ethics Commission about the task force be stricken. And in support of that, I'd like to say that if you really take a close look at what the civil grand jury said, they said that none of these cases were ever heard at an open hearing before the Ethics Commission. It was not simply addressing that you had not enforced them, but the fact that the commissioners had not provided an open hearing to substantiate what your staff has been saying. And as you can see from the very last case, which you use as an example of your ability or your desire to handle cases that you feel the task force has referred to you correctly, that it changes when you hear it in an open hearing. And so before you make comments about whether we follow the law, it would be nice for the public to be able to participate in one of those hearings, which I think also speaks to finding five that addresses that the executive director has too much discretion in proposing dismissal of individual complaints. Being as there hasn't been an open hearing, how would the public really know that? How would you really know that? And even though the staff is providing you with this information, you will be held responsible because it's saying that the Ethics Commission, the commissioners, not your staff, but the commissioners are responsible for these words that you're going to put out in front of the public. So I really urge you to take into consideration that the emphasis is that those cases deserve to be heard. I would also like to have you consider addressing what the civil grand jury said, that your website does not reflect that your part of your duties have to do with the Sunshine Ordinance, which I did not see in your response. Thank you.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Chris Wright. I'm the executive director of the Committee on Jobs and Association in San Francisco, made up of many larger employers. I'm referring to the grand jury's finding number four, in which they discuss the appointment process of the commission. And in its wisdom, the grand jury suggests that among the other groups that should be, or that the group should be expanded in, that a member of the San Francisco Labor Council should be appointed. I would point out that the Labor Council, San Francisco Labor Council, and 90% of its members have yet to file a lobbying report in the 20-plus years that the lobbying ordinance has been in existence. The commission has yet to, or it finds, or has a neutral position on this. I would push back on this finding to suggest that there's other groups that could participate in the Ethics Commission if they choose to go that route, and maybe possibly look at the members of the business community who, for the most part, have filed its obligations with the Ethics Commission as the law requires. Thank you.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm Charlie Marsteller, and I'm here representing myself today. I just wanted to say on this civil grand jury process, this is the second report of the civil grand jury, particularly focused on one aspect of your duties. I view these things constructively. In fact, I think the tenor of your rebuttal should be very positive, because this is an opportunity that's presenting itself. Opportunity is knocking on our door. And that opportunity is specifically addressing the issue of primarily enforcement, which is the last area of your duties, really, to develop in a competent way. Enforcement is tough. Adjudication of enforcement matters is not easy. I was told that many years ago, obviously the first thing is as a filing officer and facial audits, that's easy. You get into the audit capacities of the commission. That's the next shoe to drop. That's been well handled, particularly accelerated by public financing. But still, the toughest area is enforcement. That said, Bob Stern told me many years ago, don't worry, Charlie, it takes 5 years for an ethics commission to pick up competent enforcement. I'm not sure we're there yet, 16 years later. I would say we probably will never achieve perfection. That is not something that comes with the territory. I would be very positive in your response back to the civil grand jury and just indicate to them that you're viewing this as an opportunity to put something under the microscope, take something to public hearing, schedule it in your meeting processes for an examination of the whole history of enforcement by the agency, what the data shows, whether you're resourced enough, what improvements could be made. I think one big area is some of the technical training of the staff, maybe some of the qualifications of the people that you hire. All of those things can come up in that process, and I think that's what this opportunity is presenting itself for, is us to take a hard look at this. And I think a good positive response back to the civil grand jury, thanking them for their work, even though it may not be perfect, is something that we owe them a debt of gratitude for.
Good evening again, Thomas Piccarello. I'll try to be brief because you still have a long agenda, a couple of closed session matters. So that was why some of us suggested that this be separate from your rest of your agenda. Nevertheless, you know, I applaud the comment to strike the language in finding two regarding the task force routinely ignoring the advice of the city attorney. As the lawyers on this committee will know, that, you know, when we go to law school, we're trained to argue both sides. We use the same facts, but we can make the same arguments up or down. Again, thank you for striking the language. Unfortunately, though, that language is the attitude of your executive director. So what that means is, finding five, it's got to be that you no longer delegate your responsibilities to your executive director. Because if the executive director believes that the Sunshine Ordinance is a kangaroo court, then he's certainly not going to put any orders of determination in front of you, is he? Finally, let me address the issue of television. The argument of not televising the proceedings was mentioned regarding budget. This is a city with a budget of $7 billion every year. Clearly, the city cannot afford not to televise Ethics Commission proceedings. Another way to find the funding to televise your proceedings is that if you enforce your campaign violations by candidates, if you would collect monies from candidates and committees that violate the government code, you'd have plenty of money. You could televise the proceedings twice a week. Thank you.
Yes, Commissioners, Peter Warfield, Executive Director, Library Users Association. I have not had a chance, as much as I would like, to study the matter, and would certainly agree with your having another meeting to take it up with more opportunity for study by yourselves and the public. I would, however, like to make preliminary comments on finding number 2 and number 5. Somebody said here justice delayed is justice denied. It's an old concept. And one of the reasons that the Sunshine Task Force is in business, and one of the regulations, well, one of the things occurring throughout the Sunshine Ordinance, is prompt and timely response by city agencies to requests for information, and with respect to the Sunshine Task Force, prompt adjudication. For you to take up matters well over a year, sometimes years later, is not timely, and that, it seems to me, is very crucial for everybody concerned. My first win, if you like, at Sunshine Task Force that came to the Ethics Commission was in the fall of, I believe, 2004. And the length of time that that took to get a response from the Ethics Commission was very disappointing, in addition to the fact that I never got a copy directly from the Ethics Commission, but only by chance heard of the result because I happened to be present at a Sunshine Task Force when the Ethics Commission letter was mentioned in passing. There is in magic a thing called a force, and that is you're offered free choice of a card, as an example, but the trick is you're always forced by the trick to come up with the same result that the magician knows and has planned ahead. And I'm sorry to say that it seems that at the Ethics Commission, the force is always nobody did anything wrong and the complainant was wrong. Even in this case with Ms. Cawthon earlier this evening, your recommendation on your draft letter is to dismiss the alleged violations of Sunshine Ordinance section so-and-so and such against the Library Commission. What does that mean? You're dismissing something that the Sunshine Ordinance has found a violation? Where's your power to do that, and what's the appropriateness of it without having even had a hearing? With respect to myself, there are now just received in my mailbox two letters that refer to something 1.5 years old, and I can assure you that Ms. Studley is not correct when she says that this body gets a good report from the executive, at least with respect to my materials.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Larry Bush. I do City Report, and I'd like, first of all, to echo Commissioner Hahn's recommendation that there be further outreach to people about the issues and use this as an opportunity to educate the public and the people who are interested in the Ethics Commission. And I'd like to respectfully recommend that you reach out to former commissioners and people who've been involved with the work of the commission in the past to get their input as you move forward to an August hearing. On the issue of televising or audio reports that's in your final question here, it's actually city law that commission meetings be either televised or with an audio reporting. That was since 2009. I talked to the telecommunications department today. They said it would generally run about $1,000 a meeting, depending on how long the meetings go. And so if you have 12 meetings a year as a regular commission, it's about $12,000 a year. It doesn't have to be that much. And in fact, as City Report, I've paid for someone to videotape tonight's meeting, and tomorrow it will be up on YouTube. Thank you.
Good evening, David Pilipel. Certainly quite a lively meeting tonight, not more lively than we usually get here. As one of the few people who has followed the commission for many, many years, and I'm speaking as an individual, I agree with some of the comments that were made, certainly not all of them. I think that if we have not heard from the civil grand jury members, it might be worth inviting them if they'd like to present at some point. I agree in general that the report is somewhat thin and does not really understand the nature of the work and the constraints that the commission operates under. I think that the draft staff report goes a bit of the distance in explaining that, but actually could be more comprehensive. So if this is just an initial response and there will be a further longer and greater response, I think that would be helpful. I would also suggest attaching to the response the last annual report of the commission, so the grand jury and the public has, again, a better sense of the issues before the commission and the constraints, again, that you operate under. I'd like to make very clear my view that the commission, the staff, the laws that we have and enforce are not fundamentally broken. There's a suggestion that you're not paying attention, the staff isn't paying attention, that things are not really being done right. I don't think that that's accurate, and I think it's important to put to rest that notion. We may have disagreements about policy, outcomes about cases or matters before you, but that can be done and should be done civilly and respectfully, given the resources that you have and again, the constraints. I think the commission and the staff do a good job of the work that's before you, and I don't want people to come away with the impression that this is a fundamentally broken department or agency. That is my considered view. I'm sorry that I don't really have the time to go through each of the findings. I have some specific thoughts on all of that. Perhaps at a further hearing we'll have time to do that. Unless you have any questions, thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the public for their comments. We here at the commission, we're, of course, striving to be better, and we welcome your participation in that endeavor. I also want to thank Mr. St. Croix and the staff for the hard work they do on behalf of the city and county and the service they provide. The next item on the agenda is...
Could I just ask, is... if we have additional refinements, can we individually suggest that language to Mr. St. Croix? And we might want to consider some extra outreach for the next meeting to just be sure that people are aware that this item will be back on the agenda if we want to have that kind of conversation Commissioner Hahn and others were talking about. And finally, we didn't talk about it when we went through, but I think the point that our indication of our responsibilities includes sunshine ordinance-related enforcement, and that is not evident on the website is a point well taken.
And any further comments from the commissioners? Mr. St. Croix, do we need a vote to continue this matter, or we can just...
We can continue it to the next meeting. You don't need a vote.
So the next item on the agenda is a closed session discussion and possible action. Is there a motion to move into closed session?
I move that we move the meeting into closed session.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Do we need public comment before you go into closed session?
Okay. Before we let's take public comment on whether we should go into closed session.
Ray Hartz, Director, San Francisco Open Government. And I attend the police commission meetings, and more than 65% of their time is spent in closed session. And it is unfortunate in the fact that the citizens of the city never actually know what comes of those closed sessions. And I think in many cases what it is they are now a private judicatory body for the police department, and they can make whatever decisions they want with absolutely no public review of what they do and what the effects of are on the police department and the police commission and so forth. I think having these cases such as this, you go into a meeting, you have closed discussions where the public has no way of knowing whether you're making things sensible decisions or not sensible decisions. One of the things I've learned over the last 5 years of dealing with city government is once they make a mistake, they're in for a penny, in for a pound, and they will hold on till hell freezes over
before they will admit they made a mistake, like Ms. Gomez. 2 years, and all the time she could have picked up the phone and made an apology, and it would have all gone away, and all of us would have been saved. I have a funny feeling that when you go into these private meetings and you start talking about these cases, and you say, whoa, attorney-client privilege, what it is we're in this case that the city doesn't want to lose, but they don't want to settle it either. They just want to fight it, hoping maybe the plaintiff will drop dead or get hit by a bus. What I'm really talking about is the fact that you go into private session and you make these decisions, which ultimately may cost the city millions of dollars, millions of taxpayer dollars in settlements, and yet we have no understanding as to what rationale you use, whether it's simply, hey, we made a mistake, and if we can drag it off long enough, maybe we won't be held accountable, or whether you actually have some people in there who sit and say, you know, maybe we'd be better if we just offered to settle this and make it go away. And I think that's what happens, and I'll guarantee if I stay around, you'll come out of that session and you will vote not to disclose anything. And I will bet there are some things in there you could disclose that are not attorney-client privilege, but are things that the public might need to know, but you would rather keep it all to yourselves. And again, that the whole purpose of all of these public information laws is so the public can know what's going on in these boards and commissions, and the more you have private, undisclosed sessions, the less that happens. Now, we're supposed to all sit here and say, oh, well, these are nice people that were appointed. They wouldn't be on here if they weren't. But very, very frankly, I have seen some people on commissions who I have looked at, and I've looked at their qualifications. They weren't qualified. And if you looked at the way they carried out their duties or failed to carry out their duties, I feel they shouldn't have been on the board. And I think many citizens had the same feeling about some of these people. And one of them I've heard is when they're forced out of a police commission meeting saying it's all a bunch of bullshit in that meeting. They don't give a damn what we say.
Thank you, Mr. Hartz.
There are a number of people here tonight looking forward to the next agenda item on the amendments to the CFRO. And I'm wondering if it is all possible for you to reverse position on the agenda. I'm assuming there's a problem. That being the case, I would ask that you make it as expeditious as possible so that a number of us that are outside waiting with bated breath won't starve to death.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Bruce Wolf. I'm the continuing vice chair of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. Good evening. Nice to meet you all. I just want to remind you that as your legal counsel might remind you also that in the closed session, it must be recorded. And when and finally the case or the issue has finally been settled or solved or what have you, that it be made public and be posted on your website. Thank you very much.
Commissioners, Thomas Piccarello again. Too many things are being held in closed session, particularly the last 12 months. Either the budget or the entire Board of Supervisors or too many commissions, committees and task forces are being held in closed session. And quite frankly, I don't see why a discussion of Arizona versus Bennett needs to be discussed in closed session. You're an anticipated defendant. Well, who's not an anticipated defendant? Clearly, if there's issues regarding the Supreme Court decision about campaign contributions and campaign funding, the public should have a right to hear your discussion and then comment on the matter. So this one particular item on your closed session is not appropriate for closed session. And as you know, closed session is not mandatory. It's discretionary, right? You have the right, assuming that you have legal footing, to put a matter in closed session. Clearly, Arizona versus Bennett should not be held in closed session. So I would object that you discuss Arizona versus Bennett as an anticipated litigant in closed session. Thank you.
David Pilpel, I would respectfully disagree with the previous speaker. I think it is appropriate to discuss the Arizona case as a potential defendant in closed session, as I was concerned at the last meeting and you held it over to this month. I think it's important that the closed session be very narrow to just consider the city's position as a potential defendant. And I appreciate that item 7 is further discussion tonight, shortly, we hope, in open session of potential legislation. So I appreciate that you've bifurcated those matters and that your discussion in closed session will be limited to just the legal aspects as potential defendant. Look forward to the open session discussion following. Thank you.
Is there a motion to go into closed session? All in favor of moving into closed session?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Let's move into closed session. So we are back on the record in open session. Is there a motion with respect to the matters that were discussed in closed session?
Yes. I move that we maintain as confidential the discussion that we had in closed session with regard to anticipated litigation as a plaintiff and possible litigation as a defendant.
Second.
All in favor?
Public comment.
Aye.
Pardon me. Public comment on this matter. Seeing no public comment, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, I have an announcement to make. Finding of probable cause for Ethics Commission complaint 12-100726 at its regular meeting of July 11th, 2011 in the matter of ethics complaint number 12-100726, the Ethics Commission made a determination that there is probable cause to believe the following violations of the San Francisco Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code and that the respondent, Regina Carey, committed them. Two violations of San Francisco Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code, section 1.510, for providing campaign consulting services or accepting any economic consideration for the provision of campaign consulting services, without first registering with the Ethics Commission and complying with the reporting requirements specified in section 1.515. A violation of San Francisco Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code section 1.515A for failing to file a campaign consultant registration report. A violation of San Francisco Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code section 1.515C for failure to pay campaign consultant registration and client fees. A violation of San Francisco Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code, section 1.515D, for failure to file campaign consultant client authorization statement, and three violations of San Francisco Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code, section 1.515E, for failure to file campaign consultant quarterly reports. Each commission who participated in this decision to find probable cause must certify on the record that he or she personally heard or read the testimony, reviewed the evidence, or otherwise reviewed the entire record of the proceedings. Commissioners, do you so swear?
Yes.
Yes, I so affirm.
I do so certify.
Yes, I so certify.
And do so certify.
Okay. The respondent is presumed to be innocent unless and until such time that the allegations are proved in a subsequent hearing on the merits. The executive director shall issue an accusation in accordance with the San Francisco Ethics Commission regulations for investigations and enforcement proceedings.
No. No. The next item on the agenda is consideration of possible amendments to Campaign Finance Reform Ordinance, Governmental Conduct Code Section 1.110. Mr. St. Croix, would you like to introduce?
Okay. As we all know, because of the Supreme Court's decision in Arizona Free Enterprise Club, Freedom PAC versus Bennett, also McComish versus Bennett, that a successful challenge was made to the state of Arizona's public finance system. The commission needs to make a policy decision as to whether this warrants a response and change in our public finance program or not. And the issues are outlined in the staff memorandum. And so we can proceed with any questions the commissioners might have or discussion they wish to engage in.
Any comments from the commissioners?
I'm sorry that we need to be considering changes at all. It is disappointing that the Supreme Court decision came down the way that it did, and it does force us to a difficult choice, because I would prefer that we be able to do what the voters had initially passed.
Any other comments from the commissioners? I have a couple comments with respect to the actual proposed amendments. I think on page 2, line 18, I think the subsection, should the subsection there refer to C2A?
Yes, there was a revised edition of this that should have been on your desk. And it contained 8 changes, and these are just technical changes, and they make those corrections.
Are they identified in some way as different than?
I can tell you what they are.
Okay, that'd be helpful.
All right. If you go to the first one is on page 2, line 2.
Mm-hmm.
It should say subsection C2 of this section rather than C3.
Mm-hmm.
The second change is on page 2, line 18. It should say C2A rather than C3A. The next one is on page 2, line 21. It should say subsection C2B rather than C3B. And on line 22 on the same page, the word dollar should be singular. The next change is on page 3, line 16. It should read subsection D2 rather than D3. The next change is on page 4, line 9. It should read subsection D2A rather than D3A. The next change is on page 4, line 12, subsection D2B rather than D3B. And the last change is on page 8, line 10, page 6, line 10, it should read subsection F instead of subsection G.
Thank you. That covers my comments with respect to the proposed changes. Public comment on this matter?
David Pilpel, can I just start by inquiring, does an amendment to this section of the code require the commission and the board to act with the 4/5, 30 days, all of that, because the staff memo does not quite cover that, and this legislation has only been available for a few days, and the revised version was only made available tonight. So
yeah.
Can someone walk through that part first at least, and then I may have some other more substantive comments.
So your question is, what does the board have to do after we – so we – Mr. St. Croix, why don't you answer the question first?
It requires a supermajority of the Ethics Commission and the board.
Okay. And this potentially could be the hearing tonight where that occurs with respect to the commission?
Yes.
Yes.
And then if the board takes this up, that would potentially still go into effect during this campaign cycle, and with the an ordinance in 30 days and all that, that could still happen on a timely basis? I mean, I'm just trying to
I'm not sure how this works. We should speculate what the board will do. I mean, my understanding is that, yes, the board could take action that would be effective for this cycle.
Okay. So then I guess moving into my more substantive comment, I'm concerned that change, although I understand the Supreme Court, all that, at least as much as I understand about it, changing the rules midstream while we're in the midst of a mayoral campaign, I think is difficult, and to the extent that this is necessary, we should do only that which is necessary and not try to tip the balance of equities one way or the other. I'm not sure how that plays out in this scenario because it's we're in a difficult position at a difficult time. Not that I need to tell you that. All right, I'll leave it at that for the moment. Thank you.
Commissioners, it's my considered opinion, having originally played a role in the drafting of the CFRO and Prop O, that the issue is not ripe. It may be ripe regarding the Supreme Court, but the reality it's not ripe in San Francisco is that there's actually three options. One is to do nothing. Second is to repeal entirely as you see before you. And the third is to provide for remedy language that will accommodate the court's decision. Last week, the Center for Governmental Studies on Monday, I talked to Bob Stern, who also helped to draft this ordinance in 2000, came up here many times during those discussions before the commission. I talked to him, and he indicated that they, in fact, had anticipated this decision by the court and had in their paper on the Albuquerque matter or the Albuquerque advisory to the Albuquerque city of Albuquerque that they were proposing language that would accommodate such a change. They reiterated that in the issuance of press release last week, which I believe was distributed by their regular broadcast email. So some people here certainly probably saw that. I received it in the email. I think I forwarded it to some members here, but I cannot remember. But in any event, CGS is preparing corrective language, and they anticipated having something for the United States in the next, at that time, 3 weeks. That was last Monday, a week ago, when I think they announced the Supreme Court decision. I talked to Bob that afternoon. So I played phone tag with him late last week and today. They were working on something. I asked them to send you a memo. They must be exceedingly busy because I understand such a memo has not come. My proposal to you is to wait a couple of weeks because I suspect the third option will be presented to you, which is language to, in fact, accommodate the court's concerns. As you know, we're already pretty close in the present ordinance because we did not want to make a mandatory program where you had automatic matching funds, but we wanted it to be matching dollar for dollar as a normal protocol because obviously we were afraid of the hit on the Treasury when we wrote it in 2000. So that's my recommendation for tonight. If you have any questions, Bob can be reached by cell phone.
Good evening. My name is Bradley Hertz. I'm with the Sutton Law Firm, and thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. We serve as legal counsel to several organizations which participate in San Francisco elections by, among other things, exercising their First Amendment rights and making independent expenditures. We sent a letter earlier today to the commissioners through staff, and hopefully you've had a chance to review that. We applaud the commission and commission staff for acknowledging the impact of the United States Supreme Court ruling and making some efforts to propose amendments to CFRO, but we don't think those amendments go far enough. We think that the law, even if amended, would still violate the Davis versus FEC case as well as the Arizona Free Enterprise case. Even if the flow of public money is capped at the ceiling level, if people are still, candidates are still able to get excessive private money in response to the actions of independent expenditures or other candidates, that's the kind of leveling the playing field that is not a legitimate purpose under the Constitution.
But, sir, why is that level? The public, no public funds are going to that candidate above that expenditure ceiling. So how is San Francisco leveling the playing field in that situation?
We believe the reaction to the flow of money into the system by independent expenditures or by, let's say, a self-funded candidate, if there were one for mayor at this point, means that then the rules change, the individual expenditure ceiling is lifted, even though that's not public money, that's still new money coming in to balance the expenditures and the speech.
But I'm sorry to interrupt you. Please.
Sure. On the other side of the equation, and you can call it whatever you want, but if it's in response to some money coming into the system, the caps are lifted, and now other money can come into the system to counter those independent expenditures or the supportive spending, to us, that looks like leveling the playing field.
Wouldn't that exist if there was no public financing system at all? In other words, if you spent $1,000 and you provided ads against your opponent, they could spend more money. And does that similarly chill your right to speech because they can spend more money in response to money that you spend?
I think if there were no public financing system in place and there's no cap to be lifted, then there's not a problem. The problem is when you accept public financing, you agree to a ceiling, and then that ceiling keeps getting lifted in response to independent spending.
But why does the candidate who raises the additional money have any right to rely on the cap that another candidate agreed to in exchange for public financing?
I don't know if it's the right to rely on a cap. I think it's agreeing to live within the cap.
But that's the candidate who received the public financing, not the candidate who's spending more money whereby thus resulting in the publicly financed candidate being unable to spend more of their own money in response.
Right. And the concern is if the independent spending comes in and you look at the total supportive spending and the total opposition spending, then that lifts the individual expenditure ceiling for the candidate who has accepted public funding, then that chills the rights of those who are making independent expenditures because their speech is going to be answered by more money that is only allowed because of their speech. And then there's, of course, the multiplier effect where if one candidate is supported, then all the opposing candidates can now go out and raise additional money. And just like in Davis versus Federal Election Commission where the Millionaires Amendment was overturned because it changed the rules to try to meet a millionaire's campaign expenditures, we think even under this current change to 1.144, it doesn't go far enough, and you really have to change 1.143 and not allow the lifting of the individual expenditure ceiling. I'd also commend you to what the Los Angeles City Attorney's Office has written, and we included a copy of the letter, and they have found serious concerns about the viability of a similar lifting of expenditure limits. They haven't yet gone so far as to say that that should be repealed in Los Angeles, but they believe that those are significant concerns. And in addition, the notification requirements that are part and parcel of 1.143 we think are problematic and chill speech, and we believe there are cases of parties saying, well, we would have spent money, but if we knew that it was going to directly free up money, then public, now even if only private, that's going to make us think twice and give us pause as to whether we spend that money. So, again, we think there should be a decision point three that should take a broader, more comprehensive look at the current CFRO provisions and respond more completely to the U.S. Supreme Court's concerns.
Good evening. I'd first just like to applaud you for your attention. It's a long night, and appreciate the fact that you're all willing to put that time in, despite sometimes difficult circumstances. This is a real tough issue. My name is Vince Courtney. I'm the executive director of the Alliance for Jobs and Sustainable Growth. It's an organization of businesses and labor that the Chamber of Commerce belongs, BOMA, Jobs Committee, GGRA, the Hospital Association, which is the largest employer in San Francisco, the Small Business Network, and that's the business side. The labor side, we have 11 labor organizations. We have UHW, which is the largest, United Health Workers, that is the largest union in San Francisco, the plumbers, laborers, carpenters, IBEW Local 1245, Teamsters, ILW6, the POA, Deputy Sheriff's Association, and the A. Philip Randolph Institute. We do independent expenditure campaigns. The way we work, we have to have a supermajority of unions and a supermajority of businesses in order to reach a decision. And if we do, we will start an IE. Two problems come up repeatedly in trying to get people to participate. One is that people simply won't spend more money quite often because they think it's going to be matched. And the other is that they'll spend their money late to give them an advantage so that it can't be matched, okay? Problem with that, of course, is that more and more people vote early now, and so you're limited there. But I wanted to respond to the issue that you raised earlier, and that's what I see would happen if the second alternative raised by the staff were adopted is this. You'd have, say, a couple of people running for mayor, and they both have a lot of money, but one of them has more than the other. So that first person says, look, I'm going to spend maybe $1.5 million on this race, but I'm going to apply for public financing. I'm going to agree to the limit. I know I'm not going to keep it, but I'm going to agree to it. I'm going to put the $500,000 plus in, and I'm going to get that $900,000. And then when my opponent goes over the limit, I'm going to get my other backers to put in the additional money. I tell you something, if I can figure that out, these campaign guys are going to be able to figure it out. I've never had an original thought in my life, right? But in any event, I wanted to say that we agree with the prior speaker. I know that the Sutton firm sent in a letter July 11, 2011. We think the only legal option, whether we like it or not, is the third option that they presented, which is that you maintain the expenditure ceiling for all publicly financed candidates rather than lifting them based
Thank you,
on
sir.
IEs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good evening, Commissioners. Ken Cleveland, representing the Building Owners and Managers Association. I hope you guys had brought your box dinners to the meeting tonight. I don't come to these election commission hearings very often because I'm not an attorney, so I'll just tell you some practical things of what we do within BOMA as an organization representing commercial property owners. We're 100 years old this year. We were formed in 1911 here in San Francisco, and we formed our political action committee in 1987. You can't move your buildings, so if you don't get involved in the political process to protect your interests, your assets, then what are you going to do? You can't move them. So we formed our political action committee in 1987. We have two now, one for independent expenditures and one for ballot measures. We have used our independent expenditure pack over the years very effectively, I think. We've done bus campaigns, bus signs. We've done billboards. We've done all kinds of advertising. And we've done, of course, direct mail on behalf of people we supported. That has changed dramatically over the last several years with a threat, with public financing coming in and with the idea that any dollars that we spent in the private sector were going to be matched by public sector dollars. So that really did have a chilling effect. I have a board of directors. We sit down once a month. We look at the political landscape. We say, what are we going to do here to protect our interests as commercial property owners? And keep in mind, most of the buildings that you look at, when you look at the skyline downtown, they're not owned by individuals, you know, taking big bags of money to the bank. They're owned by pension funds, insurance companies, their REITs. They're owned by a lot of us in this room probably own a good piece of San Francisco real estate and just don't know it because it's in your 401k. In any case, it has definitely had a chilling effect. We have spent less money in independent expenditures, particularly in candidate races, publicly financed candidate races. So we would urge, I mean, just from a practical standpoint, that you really look at this Arizona loss, you know, Arizona case, and keep the caps on public financing, but certainly not one dime of public money should go to match any sort of independent expenditures, because otherwise our freedom of expression, our ability to protect our assets is severely compromised. So I appreciate Mr. St. Croix's comments in the Chronicle, I guess a week ago, and I do hope that you will come to a resolution that will safeguard our rights as private citizens to protect our interests. Thanks so much.
Good evening, commissioners. Given the hour, I'm going to try to be brief. Again, my name is Chris Wright. I'm the executive director of the Committee on Jobs, an association of some of the city's largest employers. I want to say that under the current law that exists here in San Francisco, we too think that it's a chilling effect, especially the multiplier problem that we have, where if you spend $100, and this, by the way, this doesn't just apply to one interest group or another, it applies to hundreds of interest groups probably throughout this city. If one group decides to spend $100, for example, in this mayor's race, there are 29 other candidates, hypothetically, but definitely nine candidates that will each get $50 in public money once they raise another $50. So by choosing to engage in just $100 a speech, you're helping the people that you don't necessarily like as much. So we are definitely concerned about that provision in San Francisco law. We do ask that you move quickly. There is a mayor's race. The Supreme Court has decided, and that we think that this is something that should be dealt with as soon as possible. I also want to reiterate a point that was made earlier about the reporting requirements. I know that many groups in the city, large and small, spend a considerable amount of time and effort. We spend a lot of money in making sure that we properly account for how much a single mailing of a slate card. We have to measure how much that slate card applies to one candidate or another. This is a major pain for many organizations. We would like to, now that this law will be adjusted, we would ask or urge that you also relieve groups from having to comply with that provision. Thank you.
Commissioners, any further comments?
I just wanted to echo Commissioner Studley's comment that it is disappointing that we would need to consider amendments to CFRO midstream at this time and that we would have to move quickly, but I am persuaded that we would have to move quickly in light of the Supreme Court's decision and in light of the similarities in some aspects of the laws that were at issue there. So. But I do have a question, and that is, if we take a vote tonight, and there's some other third or alternate proposal that comes up that we haven't yet considered, would we be able to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors on any further options that would come up?
Yes. I mean, they would have presumably then two options sent over by ethics. And they may opt for one over the other. And if our second option is the commissioner's preference and they choose the first one, you're giving them that ability to choose between the two rather than just sending a single one over. But if you wait and see if something else comes forward, it may not, or it may not be workable for us. So then you would be back to this again.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I concur with the sentiment. Any further comments? Is there a motion with respect to decision point one?
I move to take action to amend CFRO in response to the Supreme Court decision.
You don't actually need to vote. You can just get consensus that we should do something.
We just vote on what to do.
Yeah, I think if someone makes a motion, for example, out of decision point two, that's, and you adopt it, that's sort of.
Okay. Affirming. I thought we'd done it differently in the past, but okay.
Racist. I know, I'm sorry.
Okay. So maybe I should ask more generally. Is there a motion?
I move that we accept decision point two.
Is there a second?
I second.
All in favor? Aye.
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 All opposed?
On the motion.
Oh, yeah.
He's right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Well, no, we already had public comment.
I thought we just did
issue.
Public comment.
You can reopen. You can, as a courtesy, you can have a second public comment if you want to avoid hard feelings.
I will. We will reopen public comment.
Not that there would be hard feelings. I'm not that melodramatic. I did want to say, though, for the record, that under the CFRO that was adopted in 2000, allowing you this option of with a supermajority to amend the law, you do have the ability to do that, but if it only furthers the purpose of the act. And I think there's a serious question that if there's a third option, which you've been informed of, that's likely to come to you. And that has been announced in writing in the press release that was sent out by CGS, and I'm sure that members of this group in the room here and staff are on that mailing list. You have an obligation to wait to see what that third option is, or you may be in violation of the provisions that allow you with a supermajority to proceed with a vote. Because you cannot vote on something that will not further the purpose of the act. The purpose of the act, not the Supreme Court, and the purpose of what the voters mandated in San Francisco, which was for this mechanism, if at all possible. Now, I would suggest an alternative remedy to you, and that is to simply ask staff or take a formal vote to suspend, which I think you have the ability to do, the provisions of this law pending further developments in your research as to how to address this issue. I don't think there's a court in the country that would not say that you are attempting in good faith to address the concerns raised by the Supreme Court a week ago. And that your issue, in fact, is now before you is that you are precipitous, in my view, in undoing this ordinance because you know damn well, pardon me, you know darn well that a measure that's submitted to the board now that repeals, followed by another measure and another option to amend the law to provide for a remedy, you can guess where the politics may go at the board on this, as the board may vote to undo the act. And this may not ultimately be your intention when you see what CGS has in mind. But I can tell you, CGS thinks there is a remedy. They told me that on Monday on the phone. They're working on it now. They issued that notification in a press release that was submitted all within the last week. as I say, I've been trying to get a hold of Bob, and he's been so busy, and I can understand why. So I'm just cautioning you that you're opening yourself up for another lawsuit.
Any additional?
David Pilpel again, just to follow on Charlie's comments. If you do pass the motion that you were about to pass, I would suggest if you have language that supports how making this change furthers the purpose of the law, that now would be a good time to insert it. It seems to me like that is a finding that the commission should make in connection with any proposed amendment, which is why I started on my line of questioning earlier. Thank you.
Any further comments from the commissioners in light of the additional public comment?
I guess my question is, how long are we supposed to wait for this third option? I mean,
I think given the circumstances that there is no, to what I've heard, another viable option for us to consider, and given the issues, pardon me?
Go ahead and finish your point.
And given that I think the staff's solution is a workable one, and certainly I think we are furthering the purpose of the ordinance by trying to ensure its constitutionality. Or doing our best to do so is within the purpose of the ordinance. So I'm comfortable with the.
Is there anything
motion.
We could do? That would make this effective a week from now, or give us a window to see if there is something that we have not thought of. This is a relatively quick turnaround. We don't want to go further than we need to, but I also realize that if we miss the window now to do something and we leave it to our ordinary process, that we risk both extending the period of uncertainty that the candidates have to deal with, and it is never our intent to either destabilize a race or distract people from the job of communicating with the public about their objectives as candidates. And I realize there are practicalities related to when the supervisors meet and the time frames that are built into this process. So I just wonder if there is any room to allow ourselves to think about or look at any alternatives, but that would trigger, using a term we've been using tonight, that would let this go forward so that we didn't have the problem of indefinitely waiting for some potential solution. I may be trying too hard to torque the system, but maybe there is something like that could give us just a little bit more opportunity to see if there's another way to thread the needle.
I don't believe it's happened in my time here, but I think there is precedence at a future meeting to vacate a decision made at this one.
How does that relate to the supervisor's action? Do they have to wait? What was the 30-day window? Could you just recap the process from here?
Go ahead. Nope. We pass this by a 4/5 margin. Okay. Refer it over to the board. Someone at the board introduces it. It's got to lay over at the board for 30 days before they can do anything. Then it's scheduled for hearing at, say, the Rules Committee. And then it goes through the hearing process there. And has to go through two readings at the full board and subsequent meetings.
So if we came back to our next scheduled meeting and said we have a better idea or circumstances have changed in some way, we either vacate and replace, vacate and act, mm-hmm. we would the board would not yet have begun its hearings on the merits. Is that right?
Right.
But if we did that, would it re-trigger the 30-day that the board has to, like if we send another?
Right, yes. Good point, yes.
And does vacating it even affect, couldn't the board act anyways even if it was subsequently vacated?
Or we could come back here 2 weeks from now in a special meeting and see whether or not this third option has presented itself, hold the meeting with that information.
Vacate it, then start the calendar again.
Let me inform you, just as a point of information, that in 1998, the commission forwarded to the board the amendment for the annual review of the lobbyist ordinance, and then rescinded that legislation or asked for the board to send it back, and there was no consequence.
But although I think these circumstances are quite different, unless there was an active enterprise going on every day on our buses and our radio stations with people waiting to know what would happen here.
But I am aware of one instance.
Yeah.
I'm pretty well aware of them all. I don't think there's any other.
I was persuaded by Commissioner Ward's earlier comment that we can't wait for something that's in a vacuum. I think if we believe we have a workable solution, it is within the furtherance of the ordinance to propose it, so that we have a constitution. You know, we have an ordinance.
Preserve the core of it.
Right, that preserves the core of what we are after and makes unfortunate concessions.
I think that is compelling, although I wish it were otherwise, but I also think his subsequent comment about our ability to reopen this if there is something that can be forwarded to us that appears to be an even more, to be a more promising or at least a proposal worthy of discussion.
I have no opposition to that.
Well, would we calendar it for the next regularly scheduled meeting, or if an option three came to our attention between now and the next meeting, would the chair call a special meeting?
Possibly. I think it would depend in part on when it came.
Right.
And timing would be probably very important. In other words, if it came up a week before our next meeting, then we wouldn't. Right. And the other problem with sort of committing in advance to setting a special meeting is, I don't think we can make a decision based on some option that may come from one organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be a number of potential options that come out that may or may not be better than what we have. And I'm hesitant to commit in advance that we will have mm-hmm. a special meeting.
Yeah.
If Mr. Bauer comes out with a proposal, I would not agree to that, personally.
I think we need to leave that to you and in consultation with the staff to make that determination about whether there's something worthy of being brought to us.
Mr. Pilfell, what do you have
if
to say?
If I might, just I'm just thinking for a moment between the 30-day requirement on amending the CFRO, the board being in recess for about 30 days, and ordinances not taking effect for 30 days, I think it's going to be difficult but not impossible for this change, however it finally exists, to take effect before, say, mid-October at the earliest. And I might anticipate that there could be triggers in late September to early October that staff wants to be thinking about with the current law being in place, what might you do at that point, given certain things going on, even on the relatively expedited schedule that you've been talking about? So I'm just kind of playing that out, and any delay would, you know, affect when anything might take effect. I'm just thinking out loud. I apologize. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
We've already adopted a motion.
Well,
except we should.
We should. I think we should readopt.
Remove.
Does anybody have a motion?
You can do it again.
I will remove the previous motion.
And I would just propose that we add that we think it's in furtherance of the ordinance and within our authority to do so.
Keeping in mind, remove in this case is a hyphenated word.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Move again. Is there a second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Nay.
The next item on the agenda is the minutes of the Commission's meeting of June 13th.
And June 28th.
And June 28th.
Yeah. You can move them as a single item.
Any proposed changes?
Thanks, Mark.
Is there any public comment with respect to this item on the agenda? Is there a motion with respect to item 8?
I move we accept the minutes of the meetings of June 13th and June 28th as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Item number 9 is the Executive Director's Report.
One quick highlight. I had thought that in the budget deliberations that some are a big chunk of the money in being proposed for repayment to the election campaign fund might be redirected to another purpose. To date, it has not. So I expect that that full repayment is going to be made in the final adoption of the budget.
Any comments from the commissioners with respect to the executive director's report?
Thank you.
Thank you, yes. Is there public comment with respect to this item on the agenda? Is there a motion with respect to item number 9?
Don't need a motion on
we don't need a motion.
David Pilpel. On the director's report, item 9 on the director's report on the SEI non-filers, I was a little confused with the language in there. That certainly suggests that the staff is being more aggressive with non-filers for this year. What's not clear, to me at least, is if staff can go back to any non-filers from previous years and ding them and or refer them. That would be interesting to note. I also noticed, I'm sorry, on page 2 as part of item 4, that Chris Jackson is now on the BDR ding list. I believe he's still an incumbent member of the College Board who's up for re-election next year. So if I understand correctly, he would not be able to be listed as a candidate or assume office following next year's election were he to not deal with this little problem. I have suggested before that a greater, more public list of everyone with fees, fines, forms, other Fs, that are still due to the commission would be helpful to be publicized
at least from time to time. And I restate that for the record, unless there are questions. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is items for future meetings.
Chair Herr, I have one item that I know it's been a very long meeting tonight. I do have one request for proposed agenda item for next meeting that I bring up now because of timing. There has been some press lately about the Run Ed Run campaign and whether the committee behind the initiative has been complying with its obligations to the Ethics Commissions and under the governing ordinances. And so I think it raises some policy questions about what guidelines might govern this type of situation and whether clarification is necessary. So I would just propose that Mr. St. Croix report on that at the next meeting and perhaps discuss some clarification of what the guidelines might be in this instance where there's no declared candidate.
Any other items that are proposed for the agenda? Public comment?
Commissioners, since so many of you are new, I thought I would give you a quick review. Bob Stern wrote the Political Reform Act for Jerry Brown. This was in 74. He was the first general counsel of the FPPC. He formed the Center for Governmental Studies, which is one of the world's leading authorities on campaign finance and other ethics-related items. They are, or were, I don't know if they currently are, I think they are, the general counsel for COGL, which is the body you belong to, which is the Council of Governmental Ethics Laws?
Yes.
And Bob would be, in essence, one of your counsel, at least through your COGL membership. Bob is a principal advisor to Common Cause, in fact, as many in many instances served on their boards, as well as he has for many other boards in the country with the League of Women Voters and everyone else. He and I worked very closely with Julie Maul in the drafting of the CFRO in 2000. That expanded the public financing. It also wrote the bulk of the CFRO, although those were heavily amended mid-decade by your predecessors on the commission that was served by with Joe Lynn. And I wanted to say that Bob will probably have a recommendation for you tomorrow. I suspect that's the case. His primary staff person who's drafting this is the wife of the lead counsel for the defense, which was the state of Arizona, in the Arizona case before the Supreme Court. And she was in Washington with her husband at the time he made those arguments. Now she's back in LA, or that's the type of life they've been running lately, the last week. But in any event, she's working on this remedy legislation. It was specified in writing in the Albuquerque report. He reiterated it in the press release last week. That was scoped out in that press release. He's told me that on the phone. He thinks that there is a remedy and that it's not a problem. I think that if we have the option to amend our law with a remedy that will withstand a challenge, I think we should do so, because I think it's clear that there were a lot of people in the room tonight with alternative agendas.
Any further public comment? And thank you, Commissioner Liu, for your suggestion about the addition to the item, additional item to the agenda. Public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission? Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Meeting is adjourned.